Finovate showcases cutting-edge banking and financial technology through a global conference series featuring short-form demos and thought leadership. Now, the conversation continues on the Finovate podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Finovate podcast. Today's episode is a little bit different from what we've been doing. This is going to be a slightly longer interview. We actually recorded and aired this as a part of Finovate Asia 2020 Digital. Finovate Asia is an event that we've been running in Singapore or Hong Kong for some time. This year, we're unable to run it in person, but we've spent the week running a digital event focused on fintech innovation from and for Singapore and the surrounding area. And I had the chance to catch up with the chief fintech officer of the Monetary Authority of Singapore, a gentleman named Supnendu Mohanty, and we talked about a wide range of topics as a part of that show. So this will be slightly longer than you've been used to on the Finovate podcast, but I believe the interview is well worth listening to in its entirety. Happy listening.
Hi, thank you for joining us today. We've got a great guest. We are going to be chatting with Supnendu Mohanty, the Chief Fintech Officer, the Monetary Authority of Singapore. Sop, thanks so much for taking time out of your schedule to talk with me.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. We are all in this challenging time, so good to see all of you over videos and having a good discussion. So let's go for it.
Excellent. Yeah, certainly some challenging times. We're going to be talking about some of the specifics of that, but I think it is worth noting how connected we all are and how many more options there are for solutions to some of those challenges, which is something that is unique. And as in my opening remarks, I mentioned how different this would have been if we'd had a situation like COVID-19 10 years ago, how many more tools we have to be able to deal with it now. But let's start with just kind of a general question. You know, how would you summarize the current fintech climate in Singapore and the surrounding region?
There are many ways to talk about how fintech has responded to this crisis. I would say in a very, very optimistic note that if fintech ever had a moment of the life, it is now in this period of crisis, because the whole fintech narrative has been that we can deal with situations, crisis, far better than traditional incumbent banks, because we have technology that we can interact with consumer more directly. We have algorithms which can understand risk better. Now, you have a perfect storm to go and look at all possible stress scenarios and find a way to serve the consumer the best. So from a fintech standpoint, they had a perfect environment to go and succeed. And we saw a very strong evidence of such in Asia. And if I look at numbers, if I look at the growth of payments, e-payment services, if I look at the demand of people who are looking for lending from alternate platform, it just went to the roof. In fact, I was speaking to one of the founders of a lending platform, and he was saying that the demand is 5x now. They just can't get there because the supply to the demand for lending platforms is coming from investors who kind of, they're holding back the cash. So there's a supply-demand mismatch right through the crisis. And there are other data points which strongly shows that if you are a fintech and you have a mature product during the crisis, you tend to gain a lot. For example, one of the numbers I looked at, the fintech investment in Singapore, from April, May, June, the fintech investment graph just went hockey stick. And the biggest beneficiary of this investment are the fintechs which were serving the small, medium enterprise, the fintechs who are helping banks to digitize faster. So to sum up, any fintech which is helping SMEs to sustain themselves in a crisis have to gain the most. Any fintechs which are providing B2B, primarily digital services, to financial institutions are likely to succeed a lot, and they are the most valuable company during the crisis. So very, very positive note for fintechs which have product to deliver.
Yeah, and I think we've kind of seen that all over the world, that there's been this group of people who had maybe not explicitly preparing for this because nobody really saw this coming, but if you look at the way fintech has evolved over the last couple of years in particular, a lot of the tools that have been built out have made it really possible to respond quickly to something like this. And I think we're seeing that. And you're right that there are a lot of different types of companies out there, and some of them who have been in the market, who've been established, are really all of a sudden firing on all cylinders because of this massive increased demand, and we're seeing that all over the world. I think on the flip side, you're seeing that companies who weren't quite ready to handle this level of stress are struggling with that. And so that's kind of the harsh reality, the harsher flip side of that. But certainly for companies who had really used those last couple of years wisely, and banks that had used those last couple of years wisely, they're in a very strong position now than some of their, or a much stronger position than some of their competitors, for sure. So, we talked about the impact COVID-19 is having on the fintech ecosystem a little bit, but kind of switching gears and looking at kind of the Monetary Authority of Singapore, how does fintech fit into the broader monetary strategy of the MAS? I think this is, every central bank in the world is looking at what's happening to their economies and thinking, what levers can I pull? How can I make sure that we can keep capital flowing and avoid, an economic disaster? And I would guess that with increased attention on fintech, it gives the Monetary Authority of Singapore a lot more options, more opportunities to step in and engage much more quickly.
Great question. I think let's for sake of this big question, take out COVID-19 and talk about the core philosophy behind why MAS is so much into fintech. I think there are certain aspects of fintech which we think are critical for the next 10, 20, 30 years. First, fintech by design is now, I'm talking 5 years back or 4 years back, is now looking at every possible asset class, whether it is an insurance asset class or there is an asset management, or it is a retail bank, or it is a trade finance. Every asset class has got an opportunity to re-architect, redesign using technology and delivering that particular service in a new way. Speed, more secure, more innovative, better price. Everything gets into the design as they think about the new models using fintech as a way to power financial services. So that one aspect. The second aspect of fintech is that what fintech thinks the way they think about technology. The whole culture of providing API as a service, using API as a way to connect each other. And we took that construct and we started thinking about what are the national infrastructure we must have in Singapore, which will allow this digital transformation to be far more easier to propagate to the bottom of the structures. For example, we put together a strong national identity platform, a digital identity platform. We put together a EKYC, Electronic Know Your Customer utility, over our national infrastructure called MyInfo. It's a trusted data system. We put together a simplified payment architecture on top of our faster payment system, where we can pay each other by just knowing each other mobile phone number or the national ID. There are many examples like that. And these are all national rails, the digital rails on which banks operate. Now, fintechs are also operating on the same rails. Now, you have a national digital rails, which is modern, which is instant, which can provide services faster, cheaper, and a secure way. Then we have each subset of financial system, whether it's insurance industry or asset management industry, or it is a banking industry, they're digitizing itself by using fintech as a way to upgrade the system. Then we have fintechs, which are also providing financial services themselves. Now you bring it together. Now bringing it together, you have created a perfect ecosystem where the rails are digital, the products are digital, and the delivery of the product are also digital. So having all the three components together provides a great platform for MAS to start thinking about financial services in a much more holistic way, more comprehensive way. And crisis like this, it helps us a lot, because if I have to disburse any direct benefit transfer to people, I can do quickly. We get it across. People can receive this money using our PayNow infrastructure, where all they have to know or provide is your mobile phone number or your national ID. And we can send money instantly, and they can receive the money instantly, and they can spend this money in the most in the fastest possible way using digital tools. And keep in mind, in the crisis, we are talking about very low-touch economy, which means a lot of social distancing, a lot of constraint on the physical movement, and there's a lot of technology. Having a national infrastructure like that allows you to deliver financial services in a very low-touch, low-interaction, physical interaction, but a lot of technology powering such transmission. So the whole DBT, direct benefit transfer becomes far more easier in crisis like that if you have a good fintech ecosystem, which I want to remind everybody that fintech ecosystem is not equal to having a fintech company, so a lot of fintech companies. It's equal to having a national rails, which is digital rails, having a strong set of fintech companies who are providing digital services across various asset class. And the banks themselves are also adopting some of this technology to transfer their own digital agendas.
So it's interesting about this is, you know, just like we're talking about, there were some kind of fintech companies who were maybe caught off guard by the COVID-19 crisis. I think you're now seeing that there are countries who are being caught off guard as well. And what you talked about that's available in Singapore is so different from what's been possible in the United States. And, you know, when I look at how we've tried to roll out our stimulus packages here in the U.S. and how difficult it was to get paper checks out the door, figure out who actually should be getting the money in, and it took, in some cases, 2 months or longer for the kind of first round of stimulus checks to arrive. And that is obviously symptomatic of the exact opposite of what you're talking about. There's no national rails. There's no fintechs working with banks. It's all just disjointed. And so it's not necessarily something that you think, you know, the United States could have been or should have been prepared for, but certainly they could have been prepared for it, as evidenced by what you've been able to do in Singapore. So, you know, from the outside, it really looks like the fintech ecosystem in Singapore has come into this crisis in a better position to keep people and banks moving than in other parts of the world. Is that how it feels to you on the inside? You know, do you feel that sense of pride?
Absolutely, because I would have imagined that this is the way fintech should have conducted themselves during this crisis. Now, of course, I was worried also myself because right at the edge of the crisis, we were worried about the fintech companies sustaining themselves. Also, because forget about providing service. As a company, can you survive? Because right through the crisis, there are three problems. You have a cash flow problem, you have a customer flow problem, and you have a capital flow problem. This was fintech companies themselves. Why cash flow problem? Because most of the fintechs, based on where they are in their own funding cycle, there's a cash flow crisis always in normal times. You are highly optimized, you're building a product, you know, and you are managing your expenses. Here comes the crisis, it becomes accentuated. So we took a lot of action in Singapore to ensure this company stay afloat. And we put a lot of incentive around ensuring that the cash flow is managed during the crisis. Now, there are two things to worry about. I don't know how you see it in Western side. What you don't want during a crisis, that you are providing support to zombie companies and you are providing support to companies which have gone into coma. Because the last thing you expect, and people have gone into coma, to walk out of the crisis straight next day. It's not possible. So you don't want companies to go into coma during the crisis, because when things open up, they just can't walk away and start doing what they used to do earlier. So what we did when we constructed our support system, our support packages for fintechs, we ensured that whatever we do, the money goes to value creating company, not value depleting companies. I'll give an example. We told that any fintech who can provide a digital service to a bank, I'm going to fund up to $120,000 worth of subsidy, which means you can only receive the money if you're providing value during the crisis to a recipient. So that in that process, the money is going and supporting a company which has a product where there's a value and there's a recipient of that value. And that is a real economic activity. We also told that we are going to give you salary subsidy to your staff if they take online training. For every 1 hour of online training, they receive $15 salary subsidy. And this is related to my coma question, that you, when you are at home on a lockdown, I will give you a salary subsidy, but they've got to train themselves, because when they come out of the crisis, they're upskilled, they're reskilled, and they're ready to take on the new challenges. Because new challenges will be a lot of technology, a lot of digital services to be dealt with, a lot of tools to be used. And we also went one step further. We told that we are going to give grants and subsidy if you're going to use digital tools. Now, all this I'm telling you because when we started putting this money as a support for fintechs, we're ensuring their cash flow is taken care, the rental, the salaries. We're ensuring the customer flow is also taken care, because I'm providing you subsidy for POC and grant if you have a real customer, which is your bank and SMEs. So you have a customer flow happening. Plus, just a slight side note that we also had put together a platform called API Exchange. And that platform is a digital version of ecosystems where you can actually talk to a client, a bank, on a cloud-based platform and do a lot of product demonstration. You can do product demo. We can do POCs and pilot right on cloud. So you don't really need to step out of the home to talk to a client in another country. You both can come together to the platform and do your POC and pilot so that you can have a commercial discussion. So we had that, and we give access to all our fintechs free during the crisis. And the last piece is the capital flow. We had a couple of very large private players who stepped in and who provided liquidity for short-term cash requirement if investors are holding back the money. So having the three together and understanding what needs to go there, putting a comprehensive package, speed of the package, ensure the money goes as fast you can to the people who receive. You can have a, we can put an announcement, and you can put a procedures which can highly honor us, and the money reaches after a few months when they don't need it. So we took care of that, and I think that ensured a lot of our companies to survive the crisis. Touch wood, we hope we can get through that remaining months of such lockdowns without any issues. So that's our best hope. But generally speaking, we are quite happy with our outcome, and our companies are doing well.
Now, that's a really comprehensive overview of the way that you guys have thought about this and the different angles that you've approached it from. And I think it just really speaks to how deep the market is and how many different levels you guys are looking at it. And so it really is a very good blueprint for people elsewhere in the world to follow in terms of how they can engage. Now, we're coming up on the end of our time here. And so, as much as I'm tempted to, we won't be able to dive into that any more deeply. But I am really curious about how you see, Singapore fitting into the kind of surrounding regional ecosystem. Obviously, Singapore is a hub. It attracts talent. It attracts, banks and on the tech side. What do you see as kind of your role from Singapore and your responsibility for kind of a broader Southeast Asia region?
You know what? There are as a hub and as a broader ecosystem player, I think all of us have a responsibility to ensure that we don't do great work in our domestic environment. We also stay connected to other jurisdictions. No point in being extremely smart yourself if the people around you are not equally in the same level of competency. So we always wish.
Boy, isn't that the truth? I get that all the time, man. Jeez.
So you got to ensure that the whole ecosystem moves together. So it's not a great thing to say that Singapore is doing well, because it doesn't make any difference if you're connected to ecosystem where things cannot connect. Thankfully, in Asia in particular, we are not only one who have all these components in place. We have India, we have Malaysia, we have Indonesia, we have Thailand, we have China. All these countries have some form of digital infrastructure. So there are three things we focus on now. How to connect the rails. I think that's very critical, because more we get connected, more the digital rails connected, better is the recovery of economic recovery for post-COVID-19. Second piece is how to ensure that the data, the digital data flows as smoothly it can with all the privacy concerns taken care. And the third aspect, and I want to emphasize this on this interview, is we are shifting from the world of productivity and efficiency to sustainability, and I'll say more around how to be resilient. So productivity, efficiency is good, but more important, sustainability and resilience. How to build a sustainable ecosystem, how to focus on green finance, how to focus on climate change. this will be a big part of the narrative on the financial sector as we look forward.
Yeah, I think that's a great place to leave it, and we are just out of time. I think, you know, looking at it from that standpoint, looking at resiliency is really crucial. Looking at how you're connected to other economies, you know, it's one of those things where I think it's sort of an archaic worldview that we are, you know, different countries are able to do their own things without looking at what is happening around them. But we are all connected. We are reliant on outside regions, and we have to be able to engage with them in a productive way. So it's really impressive what you've done and what the Monetary Authority of Singapore has done, the way that you've tackled this, and the fact that you put yourselves in a position to be able to have such a comprehensive response to a situation like this is really interesting. Thank you very much for taking the time to share with me. And to everybody watching, I hope you got a lot out of this interview and look forward to hearing your thoughts in some of the networking sessions that we've got coming up. So thanks again, Sop. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I hope it was a purposeful, meaningful discussion, and we hope to see more soon.
The Finovate podcast is produced by Informa Connect in association with Provoke.fm Media. Check out Finovate.com for information on Finovate's upcoming shows and to learn how you can get involved. The discount code Finovate Podcast will save you 20% on tickets to all of our events. And you can email us at info@finovate.com for information on sponsoring, speaking, or demoing. Thanks for listening.